Yeah, this is Greg Dan with Valentine Hall of Famer, and you're listening to Another Wrestling Podcast.
It's time for Another Wrestling Podcast.
For the benefit of those with flash photography,
would you please shut the hell up?
Oh, yes!
Ooh, yeah!
That was what was best for business.
The kid do dig that sucker!
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Have a nice day!
With your hosts, Steve Credo and Jonathan Benjamin.
Welcome, everybody, to another wrestling podcast, episode number 42. I'm Jonathan Benjamin.
And I'm Steve Credo.
Oh, Steve, we have another amazing show planned for everybody today. Isn't that right?
That's right, Jonathan. On today's show, we have Greg the Hammer Valentine. He'll be stopped. The Hammer is joining us tonight, Jonathan. But not only is The Hammer joining us, we're also going to have on New England Fan Fest creator, the owner, the CEO of the New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, Joseph Bruin, will be here.
Awesome. I just want to say, you know, for people listening to us right now, or people who this is the first time that you've ever listened to us, we are a pro wrestling podcast, but I like to tell everybody that we're really fan supported, but we also do this for the fans. We talk about what you want to talk about. If you ever have any ideas of what you would like, a topic you would like us to delve into, because we are a topical show. Isn't that right, Steve?
That's right, Jonathan. That's the greatest part about our show, is that you can listen to us or listen to any episode, really, and you're not going to get outdated. We talk about topics, and that's what's great about it. You know, we can pick up any topics from heels to divas, to championships, to wrestling families, anything and everything, guys, we're going to talk about. We're not just talking about a Raw or a SmackDown or an Impact Wrestling episode. We're talking about topics, and that's what's the beauty of this show, Jonathan. It's not just any wrestling podcast. Well, it's another wrestling podcast.
Absolutely, and if you are just joining us and you want to find out about some more of our shows, our past shows, we are on iTunes. Check us out. Subscribe to us. Leave a comment on our past episodes. Also, really what we like to tell people is the mothership for Another Wrestling Podcast is anotherwrestlingpodcast.com. So get on there. Check us out. You'll find out where we're going to be, where we've been, past guests, all that great stuff. So
like, follow, subscribe.
Yes, please do all of those things. But Steve, before we speak with our special guest today, there's something pretty important I think we should talk about.
Well, what's that, Jonathan? I mean, what could possibly the Red's killing me. Hold on.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, what is that, Jonathan? What couldn't possibly wait until we interviewed our guests?
Well, I wanted to talk to you about tough guys.
Tough guys?
You got it. Like, who's the legitimate toughest wrestler ever? And spoiler alert, it's not Bret Hart.
I hate you.
So pro wrestling, guys, has always been pretty confusing to fans and even wrestlers alike. You know, are they really hurting each other? Do they even connect when they punch each other? Regardless of what you believe, it's undeniable that there are some real tough guys and gals who have spent time in the squared circle. Today, Steve, we should talk about some of them. So do you have anybody in mind? I know I just kind of I hit you with this, but I'm playing fast and loose today. So
All right. Jonathan, well, through the power of the internet, Wikipedia and Google is your friend out there, kids. Never forget, Google it if you don't know it. The Iron Sheik, Jonathan, legit Olympian for Iran's Greco-Roman wrestling team, I found out. Bruno Sammartino recounts a story where the Iron Sheik manhandled 6 football players at once. Also, he once dared a Marine to punch him in the face, to which the Iron Sheik shook off the blow and proceeded to beat the daylights out of the Marine. Back in his heyday, he's a legit tough guy.
Yeah, I think that Iron Sheik is one of those guys that his legend kind of precedes him. But I could see it. He used to do his workouts in front of the crowd and stuff, and he just looked like a badass. He really did. So definitely, I could see Iron Sheik being a pretty legitimate tough guy.
That's right. What about you, Jonathan? I mean, I looked up the Iron Sheik. I read a little bit about him. And guys, please, it's 2015. Go on the internet. You can look it up yourself. But I said the Iron Sheik. What about you? Who's a tough guy that you found?
I remember this guy. Jim Ross always talked about him, and it was Dr. Death Steve Williams. He's since passed on, but he was 6'1", about 295, 4-time All-American wrestler at Oklahoma University, and he also lettered in football. But I remember – I don't know if it was on WWE.com or if it was one of the Legends episodes, but they – I think Jim Ross said that he got hit one night. He was wrestling Brad Armstrong. He got hit in the eye and had to get not one, not 10, but 108 stitches – in his eye.
Oh,
and
God.
He never missed a booking, drove to the next town and wrestled with his eye and all those stitches swollen shut the next day.
Jeez, man. You think about some guys today, you know, they
get
hurt
a paper
their
cut.
Yeah, they get a paper cut, they hurt their thumb, and like they're out for like 2 months or weeks. This guy, jeez, drove to the next town, kept going. Dr. Death Steve Williams, I guess the name fits him well, Dr. Death. Crazy. I remember him, though, too. From the Iron Sheik, from Dr. Death Steve Williams. Jonathan, I also found everybody knows him as Vader. You know, it's Vader time. What time is it? It's Vader time. I should have led with that. But yes, guys, Vader, 6'5", 400 pounds. One of the biggest agile mans around. You know, during a match with Stan Hansen, I read, in Tokyo, Stan poked Vader in the eye twice, causing his eye to pop out of the socket.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Vader removed his mask to show that his eye was indeed out of the socket. He pushed it back in himself and continued to fight. What?
Yeah, that seems like he... He's
what?
I don't know what all you found, but that's got to be like the toughest guy out there.
I can't even imagine me doing anything and my eye popping out of my socket and just being like, oh yeah, pop it right back in. Like, what? I'd be crying like a little baby. Holy, what? That's just, geez, man. I don't even know what to talk about. That's disgusting.
Well, I think before we delve further into the eye popping incidents of wrestling, we'll go right now to we're going to talk with the New England Fan Fest creator Joseph Bruin. So let's talk to him, and we'll be right back. Today we have the pleasure of interviewing the Alpha and Omega of the New England Fan Fest. Please welcome our guest, Joseph Bruin.
Hey, Jonathan, what's going on?
Not a lot. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing these days?
I'm doing good. Staying busy, as you can see. There's always something going on with New England Fan Fest and the Hall of Fame. So it keeps me busy, and got a full family as well. So always on the go.
Yes. Now, obviously, like you just stated, you're kind of starting to prep for the New England Fan Fest 5, which is in a awesome new location this year. So what exactly are you doing to get ready for the Fan Fest?
I'm really excited about it. And honestly, I mean, I started prepping it before New England Fan Fest 4. there's always, you know, so much stuff that goes into it, and between the VIP dinner, and which is always the night before, and of course booking the talent themselves, getting the super ticket together, Got a great new location, like you said, the Rhode Island Convention Center. It's a beautiful place. Really looking forward to, exploring the possibilities there and seeing how everything goes. But centrally located, right in the heart of Providence, so it's a great location, I think, easy for fans to get to. In prior years, sometimes we're kind of out there, whether it be, Fairhaven, Mass, kind of offset a little bit. So just really looking forward to it. But it really does take a lot, getting all the talent together. We've got the full super ticket announced now, and basically just announcing vendors as they come on board.
Okay. Now, how for anybody who doesn't know, how did this all begin? What made you want to create the Fan Fest and Hall of Fame?
Well, I started off as a backstage interviewer and a host of a wrestling talk show through Cox Cable back in 1998, and just traveling from show to show, gathering interviews and doing in-studio interviews. And by chance, I actually rang announce a show. They asked me to, as their announcer didn't show up, so it turned into a nice ring announcing career for a good 10 years and had a lot of fun with that and just picked up a lot of contacts over the way. And basically, in New England, it's a hotbed for pro wrestling, but there just wasn't anything going on in New England in the way of, conventions. So basically, started the New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame at the APCW shows, which was just a little local show in Seekonk, Massachusetts, and I was the co-booker at the time for that promotion. And, I thought it would be something special to give back to those who maybe wouldn't go recognized otherwise. Guys who have put in so much time in the wrestling business on a local level and just, aren't really getting recognized. So the recognition is something that a lot of these guys deserve. And like I said, I've been doing it for so long. So we started the New England Hall of Fame in replace of Intermission and basically kind of took off from there. We did three very small ceremonies throughout that year of 2008. And then in 2009, turned it into its own event. So not tied in with a wrestling show any longer. The ceremony was at the Bright Ridge Club in East Providence, and that became our new home for several years. And it just got bigger and better each year. 2010, the following year, I decided, you know what? A lot of people are coming from all over to see this Hall of Fame ceremony. Let's just make a day out of it and turn it into a full-blown convention. So we started off small and just added some merchandise vendors and a couple stars, and it just grew each year.
Now, obviously, you said you grew up in the New England area. Have you always been a fan of professional wrestling?
I have. I've been a fan since a little kid. WrestleMania III, I think, was the first one for me that, caught me. And my brother was a fan when he was younger, and I'd watch it with him. And my mom would always take me to the WWF whenever they came to the old Providence Civic Center, now known as the Dunkin' Donuts Center. So very lucky, growing up, just having access to that stuff and never missed a show, and still sticking with it,
Now, who were some of your favorites growing up?
As a kid, I was an 80s boy, late 80s. I was definitely a Warrior fan. I was a fan of Hogan, not so much, everybody loved Hulk Hogan, but I think for me it was more Ultimate Warrior, some of the larger-than-life characters, the Macho Man Randy Savage, just because of the way he presented himself, and, of course, Andre the Giant. And then as we got into the 90s, Bret and Owen and The Undertaker, huge fan of them.
Awesome. Now, we kind of talked a little bit about the events that you've had in the past, but can you tell us some of your favorite moments from some of these events that you've hosted, whether it be the Hall of Fame inductions, the actual guests? What have been some of your favorite things?
Oh, man, there's been so many things that have taken place over the years. And I would say that the thing that means the most to me would be having the involvement of Howard Finkel. Growing up as a kid, I'm playing with the action figures. And for me, it wasn't even about the matches themselves when I'm playing with the figures as a small kid. It was actually announcing them to the ring. So I always had that passion for ring announcing, and, you know, to kind of stumble across Howard almost by accident. We were actually at a Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame dinner in, I believe it was Pompton Plains, New Jersey, for the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame out of Amsterdam. And basically, Howard sat at our table, and, you know, we just got talking, and we clicked very well, and just had a great conversation that night. And that was the first time that we had, you know, even gotten anything started with the his involvement in the Hall of Fame. And just kind of took off from there. By coincidence, he said, you guys are from New England. Do you know anything about the New England Hall of Fame? And I'm like, well, wait a minute, that's the one that I run. And we just kind of got talking from there, and it was just pretty funny. It was a comical night, and gained a great friend that evening. And Howard Finkel has been a part since then. Each and every year, he hosts the New England Hall of Fame ceremony, and it's just very special to have him part of it, you know, with the history of Howard, and he's done so much in the business. Another great memory was the legendary Chief Jay Strongbow. We had his, basically his final public appearance, as far as I know, in 2011. Well, right before WrestleMania, he did appear at WrestleMania Access. And it was just special to have Chief Jay. It had been a long time since he had been in the New England area. And, you know, Chief Jay was the New England scene back in the day. So to have him inducted into the New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, to have him as a super ticket guest earlier in the day, you know, it really made the day for a lot of old school wrestling fans who, including myself, who just, you know, normally wouldn't have the opportunity to meet somebody of that stature. And Bob Backlund was actually a special surprise guest that evening, literally drove from Connecticut, pulled up, waited in the parking lot in his truck. Howard Finkel, well, I should say thanks to Howard Finkel, he got the involvement of Bob Backlund. And Howard gave him the cue. I walked Bob right in. He came in, huge pop, really a special moment that night. And he just wanted to express his, you know, his involvement with the Chief over the years, and said some nice words about Chief Jay and Rick Martel and Tito, who were also there being inducted. And that goes down as a very special moment for me as well.
Okay. Now, your Hall of Fame houses some of wrestling's greatest stars of past and present. What does it feel like to give some of these personalities the recognition that they deserve? I know we spoke with Mario Mancini, and he is just pretty much, he sings your praises all the time because he was just so happy. Like you said, he may not have gotten recognized by other places. So what does it feel like to you personally to be able to give these people that opportunity?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, you know, we just talked about Chief. Obviously, there's some bigger names that get recognized as well. But, you know, it's just a special feeling to recognize, like we said, those who would go unrecognized otherwise. And Mario Mancini being one of those guys, you know, it takes two to tango. And Mario was a huge part of the WWF for 8 years. He was instrumental in a lot of matches and a lot of debuts. Whether it was The Undertaker's debut, the Hart Foundation's debut. I know he was involved in some big angles leading up to some of the WrestleManias with, you know, stretcher matches and stuff like that. So Mario Mancini, you know, based out of the New England area, just a huge part. And it's people like that. It's people like Danny Davis. It's people like the Duke of Dorchester, Pete Doherty. Just huge parts of New England that certainly deserve to be recognized. And I remember with Mario, he didn't think that anybody would be interested in him, and it was actually kind of a struggle to get him to commit, but I finally did. And I mentioned that, you know, we had a fan coming from Japan, and he had come every year, but his highlight this year would be the possibility of getting Mario Mancini. And I don't think he even believed me at the time, but he got a chance to meet Shu, which was a great friend of the Hall of Fame, and came all the way from Tokyo each year. So it was special to have that moment. And it's moments like that that you, you know, it just pays off, and it's great to see. And we don't just recognize wrestlers per se. We recognize promoters and ring announcers, referees, you know, each and every area in the wrestling business.
Now, obviously, if you look at the WWE Hall of Fame, you see there are guys that have been very instrumental into making that Hall of Fame. So there's guys such as Vince McMahon Sr. Are you opening the door for maybe someday you being able to be inducted into this Hall of Fame for doing this for everybody?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm a humble guy. You know, I take pride in helping out other people, and I really enjoy doing this. It's a labor of love. It's my passion. Honestly, I haven't even put any thought into that, recognizing myself. I'm just enjoying recognizing all these other greats. So really, I haven't put much thought into that. But we also just started the Shu Aoki Humanitarian Award. Unfortunately, that fan from Japan and a great friend, he passed away shortly after last year's FanFest, and we'll be recognizing him, honoring him with the first ever humanitarian award under his name, and his parents will be there flying in from Tokyo for the event, so that's also going to be a special night and another one of those memories that'll really stand out. So those are the things that I look forward to and like to recognize.
Okay. Now, other than a ton of guests, you've got everybody from Alex the Pug Porteau. You've got Goldberg, Tony Atlas, Glacier, John Hennigan, Maria Kanellis, Tommy, Zeus Lester. You know, it's just a who's who, really, of everybody that's going to be there. What else do you have going on for maybe people who are on the fence about attending this event? I know, like we mentioned, the Hall of Fame, there's a dinner. Can you just kind of go in and explain some of this stuff for us?
Absolutely. Whether you're coming out of state or you're local, I mean, it's just a great weekend event. And it starts on Friday night. There's going to be a VIP dinner from 6 to 8 p.m. That'll be right inside of the Rhode Island Convention Center. Basically, if you purchase a ticket to that event, it's very unique, very down to earth. I mean, you get to sit with the wrestlers at the tables, enjoy a meal. You know, it's just a really great event and something we started last year. And from there will be the Jim Cornette one-man show, which is basically a stand-up variety show. And Jim will be doing that about an hour after the dinner. And then, of course, the following day on Saturday will be the FanFest itself. That'll be ending probably around 4 p.m., starting early in the morning, around 9 a.m. And there'll be Q&A sessions throughout the day as well. There's a super ticket question and answer session hosted by Howard Finkel, and that'll have most of the super ticket panel right there in that. There'll also be an Eric Bischoff Q&A session. There's going to be a Bill Goldberg Q&A. There'll also be a Jim Cornette question and answer session. And there will also be a New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame ceremony, like you mentioned. That'll be after the closing of the convention. Doors will reopen for the ceremony right there and then. And there's also going to be a live shoot interview taking place with Jim Cornette on location throughout the day during the Fan Fest itself. And fans can purchase tickets to actually attend the shoot interview and interact with him. So it's something unique. It'll be for DVD release. And we're calling it Corny in New England. He's already done the Corny in England, so kind of putting a little twist on it. And I think the fans are really going to enjoy that.
All right. Now, we here are going to add another wrestling podcast. We're also going to be there. We're going to be doing a live show during the day. But you also have some other podcasts and different people. You even have some UFC fighters coming. So really, this isn't just for wrestling fans. It's for fans of any kind of sports entertainment or mixed martial arts. But where can fans find out more about this event if they don't know enough already?
Any questions at all, they can email me directly at hwfforever@yahoo.com. And, of course, our website, newenglandfanfest.com. Nice and simple. You can pre-order tickets on there, whether it be super tickets or general admission, individual autograph and photo op tickets. Everything's available right on the site. And, of course, our host hotel will be the Omni Providence, which is attached to the convention center for the convenience of the fans. So everything's kind of in one spot there. And I also forgot to mention we'll be closing out the weekend with Beyond Wrestling at Club Fett, Providence, Rhode Island, for the New England Fan Fest Super Show, and that's just about 5 minutes away from the convention center. So really a full weekend. But NewEnglandFanFest.com, all the information's on there.
Okay, and just before we let you go, we know you're a busy gentleman, but you had mentioned that the super ticket is completely finished, but do you know of any other superstars that are still waiting to be announced for this event?
We do have a couple more vendors. Unfortunately, we lost a few vendors just from different circumstances. So Stranglehold Wrestling and Vikings Collectibles, as well as Fan for Life Wrestling, will not be in attendance. But we do have some more to be announced, and we also have some big announcements still to come for some guests of our own. We have a platinum guest still to be announced, and hopefully aiming for the end of this month, if not the beginning of April. But really some big announcements on the horizon, and that'll all be updated daily on our website as announced.
All right. Well, we thank you very much, Mr. Bruin. We are looking forward to being there. It's going to be a great weekend. And like he said, you know, if you have any questions, please email him directly. And we just cannot wait to be a part of history, really.
I appreciate it, Jonathan. Thanks for taking the time with me, and look forward to seeing you there.
Awesome. We cannot wait to be at New England Fan Fest. We will be doing a live show there. And we look forward to meeting a lot of you. So if you're listening now, come up to us. We don't bite much, but you know, talking about these tough guys, that I'm a little nervous about it. So, Steve, if somebody out there's listening and they said, you know what, there's somebody they haven't mentioned yet, and I should tell these guys because they really need to know. How could they get a hold of us?
That's great, Jonathan, because we are all over the social media universe. We want to hear from you guys. Everybody out there is tweeting. They're on Facebook. Guys, so are we. So let us know on Facebook.com/AnotherWrestlingPodcast or tweet us with the show link or whatever you're listening to. Let us know what we're talking about, and we'll respond to you guys. We want to hear from you. So at Twitter, at @AWrestlingPod, AWrestlingPod, that's on Twitter. Guys, Facebook, Twitter, heck, even just go to AnotherWrestlingPodcast.com. You can leave feedback on that page too. Just let us know. We want to hear from you guys. We want to hear from the fans, and that's the best places to do it.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, I didn't think that we could top Vader, but I did some investigative journalism, as they call it. Google. And I found another guy that Jim Ross pretty much always touts as one of the strongest and toughest wrestlers ever, Danny Hodge. Now, he's an older wrestler. He's he wrestled back in the amateur days. He was undefeated, as a matter of fact, and then once he became an undefeated amateur wrestler, what do you do after that? Well, he went on, after not having boxed ever in his life, and became a Golden Glove winner. But that's not really where the toughness comes into play. In 1976, he fell asleep at the wheel of his car and drove off a bridge into a lake. If that wasn't bad enough, he broke his neck and shattered his teeth, but was still able to punch through the glass window and swim to shore. Now, okay, broken neck, broken teeth, swimming to shore. He made it to shore and flagged down a car while holding his broken neck with his bare hands.
Wow.
So I'm painting a beautiful picture here, but he was also known to have had what they call double tendons in his hands and arms that gave him like incredible like Hulk strength, and at even age 80, he could crush apples with his bare hands.
Wow.
So pretty tough guy here.
Yeah, man. Just some of these stories, crazy. I mean, I don't even know what to talk about it. You know what I mean? That's why we want to hear from you guys. Tell us what you think about some of these stories we're reading from such pro wrestlers. Well, get this, Jonathan. Cowboy Bill Watts, he was in a bar when a group of Marines started heckling him because of pro wrestling being, quote-unquote, staged. Bill Watts started fighting with the man, pulled the Marine's eyeball out, and placed it in a glass on the bar for everyone to see. Holy shit. I mean, you get one S-bomb a show, maybe, but holy shit. I had to say it twice because wow. I'm afraid to talk to wrestlers right now because I want to be so nice to them right now because I don't want to run into a Cowboy Bill Watts and have some guy like ripping out my eyeball, placing it in a glass, and proving him to that, you know, what a tough guy he is. But can you believe that one?
You have some fascination with eyeballs, and I don't know what it is.
I started with Vader, and I just, you know, it just trolled on to the next story within about another eyeball. So, I mean, wow. Yeah.
Well, I think this was a time when they were – I mean, this was a legitimate – people tried to test these guys because of the fact that they've always heard that pro wrestling was fake or whatever. So they would go to the bars, and there would be, you know, Iron Sheik or Cowboy Bill Watts or whoever was in there, and then they would just say, like, oh, wrestling's fake, and, oh, well, now you can't see out of your eye because I just took it out.
Jeez.
So. Well, I found a guy who – Everybody seems to have a story about this gentleman, and I think that he, as far as I'm concerned, if half of these stories are true, he's got to be the toughest man alive, and that is Haku or Ming or whatever you want to call him. There was a story that I read that once he tried to kill Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Legitimately, I guess they had a match, and Brutus came backstage and complained to somebody that he hit him too hard, and Haku literally picked him up by the throat and was like choking him to death until Hulk Hogan came in, and I guess Hulk Hogan was a guy that he kind of respected, so Hogan like told him to put him down. Wow. And that was that. But the stories continue. He was in a bar one night, and some guy started heckling him or fighting with him. He bit through the guy's shirt and bit a chunk out of this guy's back and then spit it on the ground like a boss. He then got maced by the cops, and they maced him right in his face. He breathed it in and just, like, opened his eyes and stuck his tongue out to the cops.
Jeez.
And then the last story that I like to talk about is, once again, in a bar. He reached into a man's mouth with his index finger and his middle finger and broke off – now, let me say that again. He broke off this gentleman's bottom teeth.
Oh, my God,
with his
man.
Finger. So, literally, I think that Haku has got to be one of the top contenders of toughest – wrestler alive.
Wow. If you guys and girls take anything from today's show, it's don't go to a bar where there are wrestlers at, and don't knock wrestling. So if you see a wrestler in a bar, buy him a drink and pat him on his back and then say you love him. Don't piss them off, because wow, some of these stories, I mean, guys, if we left anything out, I'm sure there's tons and countless and other stories that we just haven't mentioned today. Like I said, tweet us, Facebook us, let us know. We want to hear from you fans out there too. But Jonathan, one other guy who is on our show, Greg the Hammer Valentine, he competed in grueling dog collar matches with Rowdy Piper. He's a graduate of the Hart Dungeon and considered one of wrestling's hardest hitting competitors. Ladies and gentlemen, right now we bring to you Greg the Hammer Valentine. Joined by WWE Hall of Famer, multi-time champion, and one of the toughest wrestlers of all time, Greg the Hammer Valentine. Greg, thanks for joining us today.
You bet, buddy.
Now, Greg, you're the son of one of the most famous wrestlers of all time, Johnny Valentine. Growing up in the business, did you ever think, you know, wrestling was something you wanted to pursue?
Well, when I was real young, you know, I was a fan of my father's, of course, but I never actually saw me doing it until I went out on the road with him in the early 70s in Texas, and I got the bug.
All right. Now, was there a certain time in your life that you decided that, you know, I want to become a pro wrestler? You know, when you got that bug to want to pursue it, I mean, is this something, was there a time where you just really, you know, said, I'm going full force, I'm going to be a pro wrestler now, this is what I want to do?
Well, well, ever since I was sent up to Canada and started, there was no doubt in my mind that I wasn't going to stop. I mean, I was going to go all or nothing, you know. I mean, there was no doubt in my mind. It took a while. I mean, I wasn't an overnight success, but I learned it well. I learned my craft well, and, I made enough money to get by till I really, really knew my craft. But I wanted to be, I had to make a legend to live up to, my father. And I said, you know what, I'm going to be as good as him or better. And I just had that real goal, and that's what it really takes in life, is just never, no matter what you're pursuing, you just don't give up.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Now, training to become a wrestler has changed a lot through the years. Can you tell maybe some of the fans listening what the training you went through was like back then?
Well, you know what? Most of my training, you know, I worked out with Stu Hart in the early 70s and stuff, but I didn't learn a whole lot in a gym or in a running around in the ring. Or, in fact, we didn't even have a ring. So I really didn't really learn to really grasp what this whole thing was about. I learned by going out there and not knowing anything and getting in the ring and trying to act like I knew something. I mean, I knew a little bit about wrestling from the amateur I had, but, you know, you got to do it in front of a crowd. You got to learn it in front of a crowd. You can't learn how to be a real pro wrestler in front of five people sitting in a room at a school. That's just never going to happen. And so you just got to learn the ground way up. It's just like you signed up for baseball, you're going to go out there and you're going to play. That's it.
Yep. Now, was there ever a time during your training that, you know, it might have crossed your mind that maybe you might not want to continue training to be a wrestler? Or was there ever a time that just got too brutal maybe for you?
No, not too brutal. It just had a lot of lousy payoffs. And, you know, but that just made me more determined. Mm. And, you know, I met a guy after I was about in the business, you know, about a couple of years. His name was Don Fargo, and he kind of took me under his wing, and we were champions. And I learned a whole hell of a lot from him, and it was something that was born in me. I knew I was going to get that break eventually, you know. Mm-hmm. I never wanted to quit.
All right. Did your dad ever say anything about not using the Valentine name? Was there any talk about that or no?
Well, he didn't want me to use it for a while because he said that, you know, they're going to look for more than what you got to offer. You know, I used several different aliases, Fargo being one of them, Johnny Fargo. Mm-hmm. And it really, you know, it separated me from him. But, you know, I look, you know, I'm a chip off the old book. I look just like him. And people were saying, he's Johnny Valentine's son. And, but, you know, it was better that I learned it without using his name. And when I finally did start wrestling him, that's Greg Valentine. It was about four years into wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and that's 4 years of wrestling, six nights a week, not once a weekend. You know,
sure,
that's six
yeah.
nights a week, 340 days a year or whatever it was.
Speaking of names, like you said, you went by several different names before settling on Greg the Hammer Valentine. How'd you receive the nickname The Hammer?
Well, of course, Greg Valentine first for several years, and when I first went into the Carolinas, and I really got a good push there, and I was Ric Flair's partner and all that good stuff. But when I was on my own there, you know, I used that thing that my dad used to use, where I draped my opponent over the ropes after I threw him out of the ring. You try to get in the ring, I drape him over the top rope and smack him real hard. And actually, you know, it echoed all over the place. And the announcers, the TV announcers, they all said, here comes the hammer again. So it evolved from that. They really gave me the name.
All right.
Plus, a lot of people think the elk will drop because it's like the arm and hammer.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, that could be called the hammer, too, but that's how they got it. You know, it's the, from me being so stiff and smacking those guys across the chest.
All right. Now, were there any problems that you experienced from being a second-generation wrestler? I mean, did a lot of guys, give you, a lot of grief or anything about, you know, being a second-generation wrestler, pretty much, like living in the shadows of your father or anything like that?
No, actually, no. I think by the time they realized who I was, they knew I was pretty much my own man. I never had a problem with that.
All right. You broke into the business during the era of the territory. What were some of your favorite places to work during that time, that time frame? Was there any places that you really love working around?
Well, of course, we mentioned the Carolinas. I enjoyed Atlanta. I enjoyed Florida a whole lot. I wrestled in California. Enjoyed that. Oregon. Kansas City territory is Kansas City, St. Louis. And, of course, Detroit for the original Sheep. My favorite, was Florida and Carolina. They were my favorite.
All right. How did you decide to use the figure four for your finishing maneuver? Was it just something that, you really loved? Or did you, did you see somebody else doing it? You had to do it? Or how did that come about?
That was a brainchild of Vince McMahon Sr., not Jr. I was up there in 1980. And he said, I love your wrestling. I love everything. He said, but I want you to do a wrestling hold for your finish. And we came up with a figure four. I had no idea how to put it on. I learned in the dressing room. I went out, started using it, and never turned back.
All right. Now, you've had some amazing feuds with wrestling's top talent throughout your career. Who is your toughest opponent, maybe, and who is your favorite person to feud with?
Well, there was a lot of tough guys, but you'd have to put Andre the Giant on top of the list because of his size. And I wrestled him a couple times in single matches, mainly battle royals. But the single matches, you get you in the corner, just squish you and laugh about it. And thank goodness he liked me. He didn't hate me like some of the other guys. So my most respected opponent and the one I probably, made the most money with and had a great time, and we wrestled on and off full blast for about 3 years, was Tito Santana.
All right. Now, during your career, you had a lot of memorable matches. One of them, you wrestled Roddy Piper in a dog collar match at Starrcade in 1983. What do you remember most about that grueling bout?
How much it hurt. it really hurt. And it was a new thing. It was probably the first hardcore match. Mm-hmm. And we didn't call it a hardcore match, but it was probably the first one ever before they started all these this other things with the ECW and stuff. And I'm telling you what, we wanted to set a standard. We wanted to do something that people would never, ever forget. And lo and behold, today it's still one of the most talked about matches of all time, and I'm proud of it. When I watch it, I go, God, I was younger back then. I could take a lot of punishment, and so could Roddy. But, that's what I remember, how bad it hurt doing it.
All right. Now, I've seen many pictures of you with the I Broke Wahoo McDaniel's Leg shirt. What's the story behind that? Can you tell the fans out there?
I got to give George Scott, who's no longer with us, the props for that, because he was the booker in the Carolinas. Later on, became the booker in New York too, with Vince Jr. Smart guy, and I thought he was crazy. I thought, that's really stupid. He goes, I want you to walk around with a shirt saying I broke Wally's leg because I had just done it. I go, okay, I'll do it. and you know, he was just so smart aleckly, or just so, you know, people, what a pompous ass he is, you know, I mean, my God, he's bragging about it, but it got over, and people still wear their shirts. I guess they buy them online or something. They still wear these shirts to me in front of me at these comic cons and stuff. And yeah, people never will forget that.
Yeah. All right. Now, you've been also managed by quite a few people during your career. Is there ever been a favorite person to you've been managed by, or anybody you want to talk about?
I liked everybody that managed me. I guess the most recent would be Jimmy Hart, you know. I would say probably is my favorite. But the Grand Wizard, a lot of people don't remember him. He was a great guy. And Captain Lou, have a lot of good memories of him. Johnny Valiant, Sir Oliver Humperdinck. Some of these guys are not long. They're not long gone, you know. They're no longer with us. And so Jimmy Hart would be at the top of the list because, you know, I was his first guy that he managed in New York when he came out from Tennessee.
Sure. Now, you've also had a fair share of tag team partners. Who do you think your best tag team partner was?
Well, I had Flair, I had Beefcake, I had Honky Tonk Man, Dick Slater. Who's the other fellow? He also was a Red Rooster. What the heck is
Terry Taylor?
Terry Taylor, yeah. We were, got to mention that because we were United States Tag Team Champions together. Mm-hmm. And so was me and Flair. But, you know, Flair was a great wrestler and everything, and we had a great team. But Flair was more of an individual wrestler, and sometimes he'd forget to tag me in. He'd be in there all going nuts and doing his own thing.
Yeah.
So I liked the combination of the Dream Team, Beefcake and myself, because Brutus was not as far along in the business as I was. He was greener, but he had a lot of raw talent. And for a tag team to be a good tag team, you got to have a captain, and you got to have a guy that follows, and a good follower, and someone didn't resent you telling them what to do. And the Dream Team, still to this day, we were one of the most popular tag teams ever in that Northeast area.
Sure. All right, Greg. Now, you've won around maybe 40 titles in your career. Do you ever have a favorite title run, or one that's the most memorable to you?
Well, I had a lot of memorable times in the U.S. belt, but I'd have to go with the run that I had with the Intercontinental belt.
All right.
It was the biggest cities. It was the biggest run. It was all over the country, all over the world. And you know, you can't beat Madison Square Garden and Boston Garden as places where you frequent. Frequently wrestled in L.A., L.A. Sports Arena. I mean, it's just, I went all over with that title, and of course, I had my favorite opponent, Tito, a lot of times.
Sure. Greg, you were inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2004. What was it like to be recognized by your peers and fans alike?
Well, it was a complete surprise when Vince called me about, that was 3 or 4 months before he did it, and I go, wow, you know, I thought it would be later on when I was old and gray, but no, he brought me up there in 2004. That was a great thing. He brought my wife and I up there for a week in New York, and we had the presentation Saturday night before WrestleMania 20, which was a milestone, and he introduced us, and all the guys that went in with me at that time was Morocco and Sergeant Slaughter and Tito and Jesse Ventura and JYD, who was no longer with us, John Studd, who was no longer with us. It was just a great crew. I'm missing somebody, Bobby Heenan. You know, so it was just Now I think they have around five or six guys. Back then it was 10 guys in 2004.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, some fans also may not know, but you were a big part of the Academy Award-nominated movie The Wrestler. Can you tell us a little bit about your involvement in the movie?
Well, Aronofsky lives there in Brooklyn, New York, and so I was brought down to meet him, and he was a big, he used to go and watch me wrestle when he was a kid. Dad took him to the garden all the time. So, and I brought Brutus with me, so we talked to him for a while, and then I pursued it a little bit more to Brutus, because Brutus was up in Boston. They went down to Miami and did some more training, and I went down there a couple of times, Aronofsky and Mickey Rourke, and actually worked with Mickey Rourke. Gave him a bunch of my tapes or DVDs to watch. And, you know, I originally thought I was going to be in the movie, but he decided to go with all generic wrestlers. He didn't want somebody that was known, you know.
Sure.
On WWE TV, or I guess you want to be, that would have been complicated, probably. Vince would have made it complicated for him or something, so maybe not, I don't know, but he didn't go that way, but I did go down to the premiere in Hollywood. I was on the red carpet with Mickey Rourke, and I told Mickey, I goes, you know, Mickey, you're great, you know, you like boxing, you didn't have much respect for wrestling. But I tell you what, after he did the movie, he had a whole hell of a lot of respect for wrestling.
Oh, no, of course, yeah. Now, Greg, on June 27th, you're going to be at the New England Fan Fest in Providence, Rhode Island. You're going to be part of courtesy of Rivalry Championship Wrestling, who's going to be bringing you in. But last year, you were also inducted into the Hall of Fame. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Well, that was a regional Hall of Fame, but you know what? New England was flattered to be put in there, and New England's where I spent a lot of my time in wrestling Chief J. Strongbow in that feud that we had up there, and way up in Bangor, and you know, New England was always part of the WWF network and everything, but. Or a territory, but New England, Providence, it was the heart of it. And so, you know, it made me feel good that they asked me to be in there all the time.
Sure. All right, and now, last year, you got to experience being a Super Ticket guest. What was it like, you know, being at the convention and, you know, being able to talk to the fans who've loved you through the years? What do you like about going to these kind of conventions and just being able to meet the fans?
Well, you know, back in the old days, we were sequestered, so to speak. We never got a chance to meet anybody unless it was in a bar and then they were half lit. So, you know, it was a lot of fun. All the fans, I'm going to say 99.9% of the fans that I meet that to come out and make the effort to come out, they're very nice people. And, you know, they make an effort to come out and see us, so... We make an effort to show them that we appreciate that they are fans of ours.
Lightning round.
Would you ever do the Legends House, if asked?
Absolutely.
All right. Name a wrestler who maybe you really didn't get along with.
That I really didn't get along with. Oh, man. that's hard.
All right, no problem.
I mean, let's pass over that because I was taught to be able to wrestle anybody and deal with different personalities and to really name someone. You know, I think the guy's passed away anyway.
All right, no problem. It's a good answer, though. I like it. The Honky Tonk Man.
Rhythm and blues and music.
All right. Worst injury that you've ever suffered in the ring?
In the ring. How about going outside the ring and a step breaking? I tore my quad. Oof. This was 5 years ago. I tore my quad completely off my knee. It still hurts, but I'm just now getting to where I can maneuver and run a little bit after 5 years. You know, it's a bad injury.
All right. Now, you are a Pro Wrestling Hall of Famer. Is there any other Hall of Fames you could be in?
Well, I could be in the Hall of Shame.
There you go. All right. Vince McMahon.
Boss.
All right. Other than a hammer, what is your favorite tool?
I guess a nail.
All right. Perfect. And last one, Roddy Piper.
Stiff.
All right, Greg, we thank you so much for your time. We can't wait to see you at the New England Fan Fest this year in Providence, Rhode Island. Greg, thank you so much.
All right, man. Thanks a lot for having me.
Today's show is brought to you by
ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. They provide opinions on pro wrestling in articles without oversaturating the net with news and rumors. Pro Wrestling Powerhouse has provided a platform for wrestling fans to write about what they love. Pro wrestling. They don't censor people within reason and allow any and all opinions on the site. Check out ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com.
Community calendar.
All right, guys, Northeast Wrestling, the future is now in Danbury, Connecticut on April 10th. You will see none other than Alberto El Patron, Matt Hardy, Road Warrior Animal, Mickey James, Matt Taven, Brian Anthony, Michael Bennett, Maria, and so many more. Head on over to NortheastWrestling.com. And guys, the next night at Collector's Realm on Saturday, April 11th, you can come down and meet Mickey James and Road Warrior Animal from 11 to 1. He will be in shoulder pads and face paint. So kids, get your cameras ready. Collectorsrealm.net for more information.
That's right, Steve. And if you can't make it to that one, then 4/17, April the 17th, is just around the corner. Northeast Wrestling will be holding their annual Spring Slam. It'll be in Newburgh, New York. And John Hennigan, formerly known as John Morrison, Harlem Heat, ladies and gentlemen, Alberto El Patron, Maria, Michael Bennett, Eddie Edwards, Matt Taven, Brian Anthony, and so many more are going to be there. It's going to be great. There's already some matches announced, so head on over to NortheastWrestling.com to find out more information. Also, for fans of our show, you know that we are involved with FWE Wrestling, and they have some amazing events coming up as well. So join FWE for FWE 20 in Rochester, New York, April 16th, 2015. And if that's not enough for you and you want more, then you can go to see both their shows, Battle of Bridgewater Night 1 and Night 2 in Bridgewater, New York. And that will be happening on April 17th, 2015. And April 18th.
We want to thank you guys for listening today. Every week we create something for you to listen to, and it's absolutely free. We are the Wrestling Fans Podcast, because after all, we're fans also. Help us out by subscribing to our show on iTunes. While you're there, you can rate us and give us a good review.
If you're looking for more AWP, then head on over to anotherwrestlingpodcast.com to find out more about upcoming guests and where we may pop up. Be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and buy an official AWP shirt from ProWrestlingTees.com. We couldn't do the show without you, so please tune in next week for
another wrestling podcast.